Bethany did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across Northwest as you listen. This is their story. In one of the most deprived constituencies in the country, healthcare training places sit empty, while qualified people cannot access the courses that would put them on hospital wards where they are desperately needed. The Treasury treats nursing education as a cost to be rationed, not as the pathway between unemployed people and unfilled posts.
I walk Murphy along the old railway tracks every morning before my shift starts. He's a rescue greyhound, all legs and gentle eyes, and those walks give me time to think about where I'm heading. I grew up here in Newton Le Willows, watching my dad transition from the pits to care work when the coal industry collapsed. He used to say, the best job was one where you helped people, and I carried that with me through my years stacking shelves at Tesco, studying for my GCSEs at night school, then completing my access course at St. Helens College. I knew I wanted to be a nurse. I had the grades, the determination, and the absolute certainty that this was my calling. In 2019, I submitted my application to Edge Hill University. Everything looked perfect on paper. I'd exceeded their entry requirements, aced the interview, and felt that surge of excitement you get when you know you're finally on the right path. Then came the phone call. The admissions tutor was apologetic but firm. There are no funded places available this year. We've been allocated enough budget for 60% of our training capacity. I asked what that meant in practical terms. It means we have to turn away qualified applicants like yourself because Health Education England cannot release the full training budget. I thought this was temporary, a one-off administrative hiccup. When the pandemic hit, in 2020, and the government promised more NHS staff, I applied again. This time, the University of Chester offered me a place, but there was a catch. I would need to self-fund the entire £27,000 course fee. The admissions officer explained that the NHS bursary system had been restructured. The government says there's more opportunity for people to train, she told me, but they've shifted the cost from the state to the individual student. I picked up extra shifts at Pilkington Glass, working nights and weekends, calculating how long it would take me to save that kind of money. At the same time, I started applying for every NHS bursary I could find through NHS England. The responses were identical. Funding had been capped by Treasury spending limits. One letter stated explicitly, "We cannot afford to run the full training program this year due to budget constraints imposed by HM Treasury." At first, this sounded reasonable. Budgets have limits. Everyone understands that. I accepted it the way you accept bad weather, disappointing but beyond anyone's control. Then I decided to visit Edge Hill's nursing department to ask about deferrals, thinking maybe I could wait for a funded place to open up. What I found there changed everything. The building was state-of-the-art, with entire computer labs sitting dark and empty. I wandered into what looked like a hospital simulation ward, rows of high-tech beds with monitoring equipment, everything you'd need to train the next generation of nurses. Not a single student in sight. I got talking to one of the lab technicians who was locking up for the day. "Frustrating, isn't it?" he said, seeing me looking around at the unused equipment. "We've got capacity for 300 students, but we're only allowed to enroll 180. Had to turn away 200 qualified applicants this year because Health Education England couldn't release the training budget." He gestured at the empty wards. "All of this just sits here. The lecturers are on reduced hours. The equipment gets used 2 days a week instead of five." I stood there, looking at those unused nursing stations, and something clicked. If the people existed, all those rejected applicants, and the building existed, and the equipment existed, and the lecturers existed, and the hospital placements existed, what exactly was it that there was no money for? The government that prints every pound note in my wallet was telling me it couldn't find enough of them to connect qualified people to empty training places. During my volunteer shifts at Wiston Hospital, I met Kavya, a senior nurse who'd moved here from Birmingham. Over tea in the break room during a particularly chaotic night, She told me the same thing was happening right across the Northwest. Manchester, Liverpool, Preston, we're all running training centres at half capacity while the wards are desperate for staff, she said. The government that issues the currency is telling us it's run out of currency. It doesn't make sense. That conversation was the moment I stopped accepting the excuse. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed. They did. Hundreds of us. Whether the skills could be taught. They could. In buildings designed exactly for that purpose. Whether the materials were available. They were. Sitting unused in those simulation wards. Whether there was work waiting at the end. There was. On every understaffed ward I'd volunteered on. The excuse wasn't a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. The government that creates every pound sterling, that can fund tax cuts and bank bailouts without asking where the money comes from, was treating nurse training like a household trying to balance its checkbook. But a household doesn't issue its own currency. The government does. I used to accept the phrase, there is no funding, the way you'd accept being told there is no electricity during a power cut. Now I hear it differently. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and people who needed it. Westminster made a political decision and dressed it up as an accounting problem. I'm still here, still watching, still walking Murphy along those railway tracks every morning. But I understand now what I didn't understand when I first applied. This isn't just my story. It's the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side, while someone in a Treasury office says the cupboard is bare. The cupboard that stores the currency they print themselves.
What Bethany experienced has a name, impossible expectations. This technique demands a guarantee of zero waste or perfect outcomes before committing a single pound, a standard never applied to tax cuts or bank bailouts. Think of how this works in other contexts. When tobacco companies funded research, they demanded impossible proof that cigarettes caused harm, not just correlation but absolute certainty that no other factor could explain lung cancer rates. This set an evidence bar so high that action could be delayed for decades. In Bethany's case, every time she asked about nurse training, officials implied that any public spending carried unacceptable risk. What if some students dropped out? What if the projected staff shortages proved slightly different? These hypothetical problems were treated as reasons to leave entire training centres empty. Meanwhile, the government never demanded perfect outcomes when cutting corporation tax or when bailing out financial institutions. The standard of evidence required varied depending on who benefited. The Treasury's objection that the NHS is a bottomless pit sets exactly this impossible bar. No service is bottomless. NHS costs are measurable. The UK spends less per capita on health than France, Germany, or the Netherlands. The phrase treats any evidence of healthcare need as insufficient reason to act. The resources existed, the people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. St Helens South and Whiston ranks 87 out of 543 English constituencies on the deprivation index, placing it in decile 2, making it one of the most deprived areas in the country. English Indices of Deprivation 2025 MHCLG. The constituency has 737 registered charities. Charity Commission Register, England and Wales. Local organisations receive £12.3 million in grants, 360 giving grant NAV. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.